Good Monday evening, everybody. We are freshly back from the wildness that is Flamingo, Florida. I am tired. I'm still tired. I hurt in places I didn't know could hurt. I'm flying solo tonight. Pepe Vidal has a lot of catching up to do at home from missing so many days. So bear with me as we try to go through a real quick rundown of this past weekend's events. First and foremost, I'd like to thank all of my sponsors and all of those who stepped up to help make this trip possible for the Space Coast Kayak Angler crew that went down there. Again, we showed up and we fished and we had a good time. With the setbacks aside, as far as the delay and start time and all that kind of stuff, somehow or another, two of our teams still managed to hit at least three checkpoints. Randy English and Wade Hollowell, the Boudin clan, showed up and surprised, I think, a lot of folks and officially took fourth place. So congratulations. I see Randy's there in the chat room. I'd also like to thank Randy for being the chauffeur of the weekend. Speed limit's 55, Randy. 55. Yeah. It was fun, man. We had a good time. Alex Gorichki and I, Team Kayaks by Bo, we ended up taking seventh place. If you want to count it, we took seventh place with one fish. So if that goes to tell you kind of how tough it was. It was tough, man. Got the biggest redfish of the deal. So that was pretty cool right off the bat. So it was fun, man. We got down there on Thursday. We kind of hung out, just kind of got our bearings about us. And yeah, mullet guts. We set up camp and we were just kind of chilling, hanging out, having a good time. Friday rolled around and we decided, all right, let's go in the backcountry since I think most of us will. It was windy to start, but I think most of us pretty much knew that getting out there and being able to find fish on the outside shouldn't be a problem for those of us that are used to sight fishing. At least that was the theory. So we decided to go back in the backcountry and check it out. It was pretty awesome. Caught a bunch of fish, caught a bunch of trout, reds, a few snook, ladyfish, jacks, Spanish mackerel. Caught all kinds of stuff in the back. And everything that I caught came off of a Slayer SST or a Slayer STB in pearl white or in ghost shrimp color. Yeah. Alex is sending me text messages as we speak. Okay. Anyhow, we covered a bunch of miles. We had a good time. Now that I've had some time to sit back and kind of reflect on the events, on the tournament itself, I was a little disappointed that it wasn't as smooth and as, I don't know, to me, it didn't run as smoothly as the first one. The course itself was laid out, I guess you could say, fairly well. But unless you had a trolling motor on your kayak, there was no way in hell you were hitting more than three checkpoints. I mean, Alex and I did everything we could do in our Hobies to try and make it to two checkpoints and have time to fish at the second one, giving us just a short time to get to the third one. And you know, I'll give you an idea. For those of you who didn't make it down there, there were 48 teams that competed. And out of those 48 teams, three made all three checkpoints and caught fish at each checkpoint. And I say all three. You only had to have three checkpoints to qualify. There was actually supposed to be five checkpoints, and they knocked one of the checkpoints out because it was just way too far out of the way, and they had one in the backcountry. I don't know. The one in the tournament in Everglades City, there was a lot of checkpoints that were closer together. And when I say that, I don't mean like within a couple hundred yards. I mean they were still pretty far away. I mean, you know, a couple of miles. But it took Alex and I think the better part of an hour and a half to get from the blue checkpoint to the far west checkpoint on the outside. I mean, I think that's about how long it took us, because we were trying to plan and see how long it would take for us to get back to the checkpoint that was near the original launch. But we were delayed in the morning. The guys putting the tournament together forgot the measuring boards at the hotel. Which, I don't know, it's one of those things, when you wake up in the morning and you're ready for a tournament, you're pretty much like amped, like your adrenaline's starting to flow a little bit, you're getting really, really excited, and, you know, you're really, really pumped to just get out there and get after it and put in your best day, you know? And then when you get told that you're going to have to sit around and wait an hour, knowing you're going to lose that hour of fishing, which it turned out to be almost 2 hours. Then it was about an hour and 30 minutes or so. You know, that's a lot of time that's ticked off the clock. So when you sit down and you look at it, you know, a bunch of guys and I had talked to each other. We sat down and talked, and we were like, well, here, you know, what are we going to do? How are we going to hit these checkpoints in this amount of time? I mean, it just didn't seem possible. So when we finally got the measuring boards, I told Alex our game plan was pretty much, yeah, there you go, 8:20 we left out of the start. There you go. We're supposed to leave at 7, so an hour and 20 minutes late. Anyhow, when I left out of the launch, I had Alex stay up there by the check-in, grab our measuring board, and then run down to the water, and we both took off. We had probably pretty close to about a 200-yard lead leaving the launch, which is what I was hoping for, to take that to Snakebite, which was the blue checkpoint. Our idea was, let's get up there. It's sight fishing up there. Let's get up there, get on the flat before it's beat to hell and back, and get our fish and get out of there in as little time as possible. So, you know, we took off. We did pretty well. And we pushed ourselves a little hard on Friday. And I know that it started to affect Alex a little bit, because he's not quite used to the turbo fins in his Outback yet. And there's a difference between pedaling with those standard fins and pedaling with those turbo fins. I mean, you can definitely feel the difference. But either way, so we started to have to slow up a little bit. We were getting passed by a couple of people, actually a bunch of teams. But I'll be the first one to say, and I seriously doubt they're listening to this podcast, but if anyone was there and you guys saw the team from Nova Scotia that came down and rented a canoe to do this thing, if you were not impressed with those people, then I don't know. I don't know what would impress you. Husband and wife team jumped in this canoe and took off like a bat out of hell. I think they were the second team to check in at Blue Checkpoint. I mean, they were gone. They checked out. We tried to catch them. We just couldn't keep up. They were just completely gone. Yeah, Drew, I know what you're talking about. So, you know, we got up there to the blue checkpoint and got checked into the ditch I mean, again, I guess that was part of the intention, just to make this thing as miserable as possible. But that ditch leading into the checkpoint itself absolutely sucked for anybody in anything other than a paddle, like a normal paddle style kayak. You know, that PA doesn't like mud and slop, but yeah, so they end up taking yeah, thank you for saying that, bro. The folks from Canada end up getting big snook. They caught a 28-inch snook at the blue checkpoint, and they end up taking the biggest snook of the tournament. That was pretty cool. But anyhow, so Alex and I got our token. We decided to hit a back bay that we saw on the way up, and because it looked pretty promising, there was a bunch of bait in there flicking around and whatnot. The only thing I saw the whole time we were in that bay was just a bunch of sharks. And so, you know, Alex and I were kind of debating whether or not we're going to stay there, what we should do. And I'm like, dude, on the way in, I saw a bunch of fish on the right side of the canal. Let's get in there. Let's get after it on the inside of the canal. So we jumped over there, found a little trough that ran up into the canal, and gave us a little bit of depth of water to get up on that flat. And I'll tell you what, if you've never fished in Flamingo, especially around Snakebite and those whole areas, well, really just the entire area, the bottom is the consistency of like wet putty. It's mud, but it's crushed coral type mud, to where when it dries, it's like concrete. I mean, it's strange, but it was really hard to push pole in, and there's no pedaling in that shallow stuff. So we stood up, we were looking for fish. I had a couple shots at some reds early, missed them, and then Alex popped a 25 and a was it 25 and a quarter inch redfish. Looking back at the photo, we could have gotten an extra credit for being 25 and a half, but who cared at that point. But 25 and a quarter inch redfish at the blue, which gave us what, 51 inches or so leaving out of that spot, or 50 and a half inches, I guess. Yeah, whatever it was, leaving out of that spot. So we were pretty stoked. We thought we had a pretty legit chance at this thing if we could just find two more fish. So turn around, go to burnout, and haul butt up to the next checkpoint we wanted to hit, which was past the one in front of the campground. And I don't know what color it was. I don't remember. But the far west one, I guess. But we got up there, and on the way to it, we're blowing redfish out after redfish out, and giant snook, and it was stupid the amount of fish we saw going to that checkpoint. So we kept trying to keep a mental note of we tried to keep a mental note of what was going on as we were paddling up to the next checkpoint. So when we got there, we can kind of double back and hit a spot where we might have saw some fish, whatever. So that was our game plan. We did that. We got to the next checkpoint. We came back out. We hit some areas. We saw some snook get blown out of some potholes and stuff. Didn't really do a whole lot at that point. And then all of a sudden, I look over and I see this big green patch of grass. And I'm thinking to myself, man, there's got to be something laid there. The tide is just starting to really kick to the other side, and there's a little bit of water movement on the one end. So I flip out a what was the Ghost Shrimp SST from Slayer Inc., and immediately gets hit. And it's a small trout, you know, 15, 16 inches, something like that. And I get it within, I don't even know, maybe like 2 foot of the nose of the kayak. And about a 6 foot lemon shark decides to make it its breakfast. Just out of nowhere, kaboom, blows up on the thing and cut me off. And I'm just standing there, and it just like, really? Did that really just happen? And I've seen tons, we saw tons of sharks on the flats. So I wasn't surprised that that was going to happen eventually. I was just pretty bummed that it happened to us because we really needed that fish. And there was a camera boat that started to follow us after we left out of that checkpoint, the blue checkpoint. And the guys were like, dude, we totally saw that, man. That was awesome. And I was like, yeah, that was pretty cool, man. That was definitely worth the price of admission, I think is what I said. And then the camera guy reminded me that, yeah, but that price of admission could have just cost you the tournament. So, I guess my excitement for us being in a pretty good position at that point kind of started to falter a little bit, and I looked over. No sleigh ride, bro. It was that shark must have swallowed that trout down to its butthole as soon as he ate it, because the rod didn't even flinch. It was just like, bam, and it was gone. So I look over, and Alex is sitting there, and he's flipping and flipping and flipping, and all of a sudden this like 6-foot tarpon comes cruising by us. And at this point, I'm just like, you know what, dude, running out of time. There's probably no way in hell we're going to hit 3 checkpoints. I'm not passing up an opportunity to throw at a 6-foot tarpon. So I threw a jerkbait to the tarpon. He turned on it, looked at it, and then swam off. And my heart got a little racy there for a second. Excuse me, thinking that it was actually going to happen. And it didn't. So we slide over into the chocolate milk, or not even chocolate milk. We slide over into the milk of magnesia water, pure white water. And we start casting around there. And yeah, it was interesting, man. Anyway, it was interesting there. We threw some dark colored baits in that white water to see if we can maybe get some attention from something. And we threw some light colored baits as well. Turned around, and Alex hooked a snook up underneath a mangrove tree. And in typical snook fashion, it darted out at him, head shaking towards him, and threw the hook. So now it was two fish that we lost at that checkpoint. And at that point, we were both just like totally just bummed. Wind was out of our sails. We tried to pick it up and try and find another fish before we checked our token back in. Just didn't happen. So we were down to just one. We were basically out of the event as far as winning. We knew that, but we wanted to get in and hit at least one more checkpoint, because we figured that if you hit at least one more checkpoint and catch a fish, say you caught a fish, at 2 out of the 3 checkpoints, knowing how hard it was to get to just 2 checkpoints, there may have been an opportunity to pick up some kind of a place in the tournament if they were going to just do that kind of as like a, wow, only a few teams made it. Well, here would have been your top 10. It still looks good to be in that top few teams or whatever. So we hauled butt to the checkpoint that was right, I guess it was purple, that was right out front. And Wade and Randy were already over there fishing. We slid up. We had like not even 15 minutes. We had like 10 minutes to spare. We got the token, slid up around some mangrove trees, threw up underneath the trees, hoping to pull a snook. Nothing happening. I ask Alex what time it was. He's like, dude, we're good. We got like 3 minutes. And I'm like, 3 minutes? 3 minutes to get in line, dude, not 3 minutes to check in our token. So we spun around and we went back over, pulled the boats up on the dock and ran, or pulled the boats up on the land and ran to the start-finish line of sorts. And we made it in on time. But, we didn't have three fish. We only had the one fish to show for it. So by the way that things kind of unfolded, that's why in the beginning of the show I said the unofficial results was like, the booby prizes went to those of us that at least we completed 3 checkpoints. Regardless of how many fish we caught, at least we checked in at 3 different checkpoints. So that was pretty cool. It just, I don't know. It's like there was no prize to hit 3 checkpoints. And without actually catching the three fish, right? So, I mean, does it, to me, does it really make a difference that we placed seventh? I mean, it sounds cool, but in reality, there was three teams that placed. First place was Finn Crazy, team number two, which was Casey Burning and Steve Gibson, Steve M. Gibson, with 92 total inches. Then you had Finn Crazy three, with Michael Etheridge and Walt Palin, and they had 79.8 inches. And then team number third place team was Canaveral Spotted Monsters, Norman Betty and Chris, I think it was DeLapa, DeLapa, something like that. And he had 74.8 inches as well. So, you know, I mean, those guys did a hell of a job. And I'm going to tell you right now, from sitting back and watching this whole thing unfold, if any of you guys are listening that were there, you have to understand how difficult that has to have been to plan your route in such a way that you had enough time to catch a fish at three checkpoints. So kudos to those dudes. Super stoked to see Steve Gibson win. It was really awesome, man. Finn Crazy guys, effing crazy guys. I'll tell you what, man, there's a story behind their trip that is just absolutely incredible. I mean, absolutely incredible. One of their teams, they got stuck out on Friday night. They got stuck out in the middle of the marsh. They were out there till I think 4 o'clock in the morning before they finally made it back to the camp. So I don't know. That was crazy. All in all, I think that I mean, if I could be brutally honest, I think that the tournament itself did not go off, I wouldn't imagine, as they had planned. I think that it being changed, the locations being changed, thrown for a loop. You know, I always have fun going to these types of events regardless, because I don't care about tournaments. I like to just go and fish and have fun and talk to fellow like-minded kayak anglers. You know, so I don't go in expecting to do anything in any of these things. I just like to go and camp and enjoy the camaraderie. But the food was kind of a letdown for a lot of guys. I mean, there's a lot of folks that didn't get fed. I think whether or not they didn't plan for enough food or just people took more food than they should have, I don't know. But you know, these types of things are a lot of what you make it to. So we at the SeaDeck camp, as we officially were known, we didn't have any problem with food because most of us are heavy guys and we brought plenty. So that's pretty much how it went down. I don't know. You know, I don't know. This tournament, you know, and I'll probably get beat up for it. But this tournament is a lot of fun. It can be. Last year's event was an absolute incredible tournament. I mean, the way they did it was just awesome. The checkpoints were good. The fishing was great. Everything about it ran smooth and it didn't feel like a race. Like, it just felt like it's an endurance thing is what it was, you know? I like the challenge of having to try and beat yourself or to beat others, be more physically fit, be more, you know, be a better paddler, be a better fisherman, that kind of thing. But you know, I just think that, I don't know, man. You know, I didn't have any time to really sit down and talk to the guys from Native who put it on because they were all pretty busy. But, you know, there'll definitely be some words of advice and maybe words of encouragement coming their way from a lot of us, I think, in the next few weeks to come. There was a lot of money put out to fish this thing from some of us, and you know, for something like forgetting the measuring boards to have happened was kind of a joke. You know, that's just inexcusable. I mean, there's no other way to say it. You know, but they passed out T-shirts the night before. They should have passed out the boards the night before too, is the way I looked at it. But you know, whatever. On a positive side, I can tell you that Flamingo is a place where I definitely have to get back to. I definitely want to go back down there and fish and enjoy it, because man, there's some really good fishing to be had when you don't have to the pressure of having to race from checkpoint to checkpoint. I mean, I saw so many fish while we were there, and so many different species of fish, and it was crazy, man. Absolutely crazy. Yeah, I want to go back there with a skiff for sure. Skiff and some kayaks and bring some extra fly rods and stuff like that, because the number of tarpon, and I'm not talking about little tarpon, the number of giant tarpon that I saw down there was just absolutely mind-blowing. I had one roll going through the snake bite channel that was had to have been 120-pound fish. It was right in front of me. And I'm just like, really? You know, the camera boat was following us, and I look over at the guy. I'm like, I just want to catch him. Is that a problem? Can I fish now? Can I just quit the tournament, fish, and catch the stupid tarpon? But whatever. I don't know, man. You know, it's everybody has their own opinions of how things go and everything else like that. And, you know, I look at it as it's just a shame that it kind of, in a way, it kind of has a black eye, in my opinion. And I hope that it comes back next year. I hope that there's a possibility for it to recoup, I think, what it had. You know, somebody said it at the award ceremony. The first year was like, okay, let's try this out and see how it goes. It didn't sell out, of course, because there's a lot of people that looked at it like it was crazy. There's no way in hell I'm doing that, whatever case may have been, but it didn't sell out. And then this year was like their coming out party, you know. Okay, cool, we did the first one, people loved it, and it sold out, and there was a waiting list for teams, and you know, everything was good. And you know, I don't know, I think that the course itself wasn't laid out well. I think that they didn't utilize any of the islands that were out in front of the campsites to points or any of the outer areas, even though that would have been a long trip too. At least it would have given us a little bit of an opportunity to cover some deeper water and some folks not have to get stuck because of tide and whatnot. But yeah, that cooker, man, the convection charcoal cookers, is that what they're called? That thing was awesome. The guys from Louisiana had that thing. They had it loaded down with ribs and chicken one night. And I'm going to have to get the guy who makes those things to come on the show, talk about them. Because I've eaten a lot of ribs. I've eaten a lot of chicken. But I've never eaten ribs and chicken. It tasted like that coming out of something that looks like it should have a beer tap on top of it. But that was good. Good stuff. So if anyone's in the chat room and you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can feel free to put those up there if you'd like to. I'm going to pull caller in here. I think it's Captain Alex. What's up, brother?
What's going on, man?
Tired still, man. Tired.
Today was definitely the recoup day after driving all day yesterday and breaking down camp and everything. You almost didn't have a chance to recuperate at night. So definitely catch up today.
Yeah, we're just going over kind of, you know, our theories of how the thing worked and how it went and the whole thing. And Mike's asking, New Smyrna Beach Mike is asking if I would do it again. I would do it again. Yeah, I'd do it again. See, and that's just the thing. It's like I would do it again, but I would need to know that everything is in place. And I would want to know an idea. I would like to know an idea of what their plan would be for location, because, you know, again, going back to the way this course was laid out, I don't think that it was humanly possible that even if we left at 7, that it's not humanly possible to hit all 5 checkpoints. And that was the thing with the Everglades City tournament, was that if you pushed yourself, like we had to push ourselves to hit 3. If we pushed ourselves that hard at the Everglades City one, anyone could have hit 5 checkpoints. Would you agree, Alex?
Absolutely. Yeah, it was, It was, well, I mean, Randy English laid it out on the chart plotter. You know, we did only three checkpoints and right at 24 miles, I think, is what he had. They were practically the same water we did. You know, yeah, it was a little too stretched out, not enough breaking up. There's definitely going to need to be a little retooling, I think, of the situation. The venue, I think, was good. You know, the fishing obviously was there. They just, I don't know, maybe they need to take more of a fisherman's look at it than a paddling look at it, or what needs to happen. But I'd love to fish it again. I'd have a hard time fishing it again if I knew the format was going to be exactly the same as it was this year and potentially have the same pitfalls that it did this year. So it was, you know, it was still a good day, and things would have gone a little different in different situations. You know, you and I could have very easily been right up there, you know, in the top three with the other people that were able to make the three checkpoints and make fish at the three checkpoints. It's just, it was upsetting in the fact that, you know, they didn't have a viable option for the backwater and the Florida Bay side. And because of that, they should have just determined one or the other to fish. You know, having any kind of separation between the two just didn't work out. That was one of the best things I think about our pre-fishing, even though me and you got it handed to us coming across Whitewater Bay. I still can't wait to see some of the footage from your from your camera from that one.
I don't want to talk about that, by the way.
That was ugly, you know. I'm ugly, but I'm glad we did it, because had I drove all the way down there, and tournament day, we weren't looking at the backwater at all, pretty much. And you know, had I not fished it the day before, I would have been pretty miffed that we didn't get to go see some of the places that I wanted to see, you know. And they just there's definitely some things that need to be worked on. It is a great tournament. It's a great format. It's interesting. It makes you think. It makes you work. And, you know, you got to be on your game, not just with the fishing, but with your time management and everything. Those aspects of the tournament, I think, are solid and good aspects. However, some of the execution this year was left a little bit to be desired. So...
Well, yeah, I mean, and to me, that's the thing about this type of an event is that, you know, it's not a typical tournament. I mean, Drew Mixon's in the chat room, and he says the AFWC is an event. There are a few like it every year, Boondoggle, the Extreme Series. It is not a regular tournament. It needs to be managed as such. Detailed logistics are a must. A seasoned tournament angler needs to be on the tournament committee. And I agree with him. I know exactly what he's saying. It's just, you know, the idea of a pullover, the idea of a, you know, the backwater, the open Florida Bay, that kind of thing. It didn't make a lot of sense to me to begin with, because of knowing how long it takes to get back there and how long it takes to get out. There wasn't that kind of time, you know. There was way too many other options that they could have gone with as far as other checkpoints out in the bay that would have given the guys that wouldn't have given anybody an idea to go back in the back, which to me made no sense to begin with. As soon as we looked at the map, I think I even said to you, we're not going to the back. It doesn't make any sense because we'll lose way too much damn time, you know, because you just couldn't physically. What?
Their thing was that is if you did that pull over, that you'd be able to manage that. And unfortunately, they didn't think about that pull over very well. And transitioning from, you know, kayak to ground to kayak, and in the assumption that somebody would be willing or able even to manage 4 miles, some of it through the woods, some of it down a street, you know, pulling their kayak behind them. That's just not really a feasible, you know, it's just with with still trying to manage, it's just not feasible. I mean, two teams did it. One team, it killed them. It put them out of the tournament. They quit. The other team made it, but didn't even make it back in time to get checked in. Cute. So.
Yeah. Well, and the thing, hang on a second. Gene just asked a question. She said, I thought you had to hit a minimum of 3 checkpoints for fish to qualify at all. Why bother paddling all the way to blue if I could win hitting 2 checkpoints and fishing those all day? I guess I'm confused. You have to catch, listen, in order to officially place, you have to catch a fish at 3 checkpoints. It's the same as it was last year. You have to catch at least one scoring fish at least 3 checkpoints. So the idea of the blue checkpoint for Alex and I was, I would much rather paddle the snake bite than to paddle down that creek or that canal, go into the backwater, go up through the little mangrove tunnel, get my token, have to come out of that, and then fish Coot Bay, which Coot Bay, there really wasn't anything in Coot Bay that I saw that was worth a crap to try and catch, you know? And so we figured hit blue, come back, skip over the one right out front, because if you do that, then when you get to that one, at least you can fish up to the last minute, go down to what was that, black or whatever it was, the one all the way west, and then come back to the one in the middle.
Red.
Whatever it was, red, whatever. And it's just, you know, can you imagine how different it would have been if we started at 7 and had, see, the silver checkpoint, nobody would have ever made it to it. That's the thing is, like, you know, when you look at the map, you know, when you look at the map, nobody would have ever made it to that checkpoint and made it to 2 other checkpoints. There was no way. There's no way and caught fish, because you literally would have to pull up, get your token, turn around, and haul ass for the next checkpoint. Like, there's just no way you could have done it, you know? And I don't think – I just don't think anybody could have made it to it, man. I really don't, you know? There was big fish – honestly, there was big fish at blue. There were huge snook along that channel. You know, and there was some big fish on the inside. But, you know, I look at it like, again, and I'll go back to last year, because last year was the bar that they set that I think they set really, really high. We didn't have 4 minutes to fish at a checkpoint last year. We had 45 minutes or an hour to fish at a checkpoint last year. And if you manage your time, you could even fish a little bit longer than that if you weren't going to try and hit 4 or 5 checkpoints. So, you know... I don't know, but what are you going to do? It was, I had a great time. I always enjoy fishing with my buddies and seeing some of my old friends, making new friends. It's a shame because, as Drew pointed out and a lot of other people pointed out, it's just, you know, it's a lot of money wasted, man, for guys that are hardcore serious about tournaments, you know? When you get down there and it's like decision-making processes didn't seem to really work very well. I don't know. That Finns is still placed higher than people that hit all 3. No, I don't think that. I think that Gene asked if there's teams that only hit 2 that placed higher than people that hit all 3. No, I don't think so. The only ones that the only teams that I know that they kind of gave a place to were those that still finished 3 checkpoints. You know, I don't know. I didn't see anybody else that finished only 2 checkpoints and caught 2 fish that placed in the top 10. I thought everybody else hit at least 3, but I don't know. And again, let's be honest here. Okay. There were 3 prizes. So the first place, second place, and third place team won prizes. And then they gave away they gave me and Alex each a $50 gift card. for the biggest redfish. They gave the folks from Canada a $50 each gift card for the biggest snook. And Chip Gibson and the clone got a gift card for the biggest trout. How many fish caught at Double Checkpoint in Rattlesnake? I don't think very many. I think there was only like a handful of fish. I know that D. Kaminsky came in right before Alex and I. She had a 22 and something inch redfish, or 21 and something inch redfish. And then Alex and I had our fish, and that was 25 and a quarter. And then right after that, I guess it would have been Wade and Randy came in with a 22 inch redfish. So, you know, that's why, yeah, and I agree with Jean. She says, I agree, the top three are champs no matter what. No doubt. I mean, when you sit back and you look back at the actual, you look back at the actual total inches or the total amount of fish caught for those three teams, and being able to do so under those conditions, those guys rocked it, man. Yeah, my disaster story. You want to hear a disaster story? So, which was funny because as I'm coming in to get in line, everybody, people kept asking me, "Are you the guy who had the shark eat his trout?" I'm like, God, just keep rubbing it in, people. Yeah, I had a trout get eaten by a lemon shark right off the bow of my boat that came out of nowhere. That was awesome. Until I realized that I really needed that trout. So that kind of sucks, but we had 50, what do we have, 51, 50, 50 and a half inches or something like that, Alex?
Yeah, right around that, something like that.
Yeah, so, and that's why whenever people ask, you guys finished seventh. Well, yeah, I mean, we're unofficially seventh place. Like, you know, the unofficial official spot for us, I guess, would be seventh, because at least we hit three checkpoints. And we had a fish, you know, but I agree with what a lot of guys have been saying, and that's that was the thing. I mean, it was if you went all the way up the snake bite and you didn't catch a fish, you were done. Your day's over. Like, there's no coming back from that. And that truly that's what separated last year's event from this year's event. Was last year's event, Pepe and I caught a trout, a silver trout, sugar trout, whatever the hell you want to call it. And I told him to take a picture of it, and we both decided, forget it, don't worry about it, because it's got to be a spotted sea trout. And we threw the fish back, and we left that checkpoint without a fish, but we were still able to hit another checkpoint. So that would have been really good for us, you know, because, I mean, it worked out really good for us, because we had enough time to fish that other checkpoint. We just couldn't score another fish. This one, there's just no way, man. When you decide to make whichever way you went, whether you went in the backcountry first or out the snake bite, either way you went, you had to catch a fish there, period. You couldn't leave until you caught a fish. There's nowhere to go. Like, you can't make it up, you know, and try and win the boats anyways, or try and place in the top anyways, you know. So for Alex and I, leaving the second checkpoint was one of those things where we decided, look, we're pretty much out of time. Like, we have enough time to get back there. Say that we at least made it, you know, and, you know, made it to three checkpoints, and try and pull something out of our hat as far as getting one more fish, just in case, you know, no team got three fish at three checkpoints, because we didn't know. I know Dee Kaminsky and her husband had two fish going into the last checkpoint and didn't make it in on time. But, you know, that was the only team I knew of, because they were in front of us leaving Snakebite. So I knew they had two fish going into the next checkpoint. I didn't know Randy and Wade did. That was the only team that I knew that did. So I don't know. You know, the Louisiana guys getting stuck out Friday night, I mean, that was just, that's crazy. I mean, I'll tell you what, man, there's a lot of things to go bump of the night down there in the Everglades. And for those dudes to have done what they had to do to get out of there and then go back and then come back by paddling on the outside, I mean, they did like 30 miles in one day. It's just, it's crazy. You know, and that's, and that's one of the things, I see what Captain X Crew's saying. I have a new respect idea how far we can go on a yak. I would have never thought doing that distance. And that's the thing about this tournament, and that's what we tried to preach to everybody going into it. We were, and some people took us as being cocky or arrogant or whatever, those of us that fished the first one. We weren't being that at all. We're just trying to explain to people, you have no concept of what you're about to do. Because when you try and break down that kind of a distance, 20-plus miles of kayaking, and having to navigate and then go back to the place where you just got your token from at some point, putting extra miles on you anyway, that was the hardest part of this event. You know, catching a fish, I think that with the caliber of anglers that were down there, in fact, I was like shocked to see some of the guys that came down to fish this thing. And to see the caliber of anglers that were there not catch fish, I wasn't surprised, because I'm not surprised that Alex and I didn't catch all three, you know, three fish at three checkpoints, because we didn't have freaking time. You know, it's you're essentially fishing three completely different areas. So unless you have had time to pre-fish similar type areas, not the same area, but similar type areas to kind of get a feel for, okay, over here, where would they like to, you know, where would they want to be, blah, 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 whatever. A good example is that second checkpoint we hit. The water was like, seriously, it was like milk of magnesia. And if you told me that there were fish sitting in that crap when there was crystal clear water just outside of it, I never would have believed you. Because here in our backyard, typically, if the water is crap here, but it's clean down the way, the fish are in the clean stuff, you know? So, but it was backwards. I don't know. It was interesting. No, you don't know. You do not know your checkpoint locations on pre-fishing day. And pre-fishing this particular tournament, honest to God, is a complete and utter waste of time. Because we did it last year. What did we do last year, Alex? 18 miles?
Yeah, right at 17, 18 miles.
Yeah, we did 17 or 18 miles last year. And, you know, we never once saw the same body of water on tournament day. Never once passed by the same mangrove edge, nothing. So, and our pre-fishing last year was all for naught because a front came through at night and cooled everything down and turned the bite completely on its head, you know. What I went from what I had like 40 or 50 fish on Friday last year, I caught two day of the tournament, and I was doing the same thing I did the day before, but you know the bite completely changed and you just, but that too is one of the draws of this event. That's one of the things to me that makes this event so unique, is because it's completely up in the air, anybody's ball game. You know, you have to do the time management. You have to have the stamina and the ability to be able to go out there and get after it, and the mental strength to not give up, not to give in and say, you know what, I'm whooped, I can't do it. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, it was, you know, pre-fishing it, I mean, unless you had time to pre-fish it several days in advance and really lock down a pattern and then let yourself rest day before so that you had fresh, you know, fresh energy going into day of tournament, it's just almost counterproductive. But that's the thing, though. The original course, as it was laid out, was virtually impossible regardless.
Hold on a second. Wade's saying it was not a waste of time to pre-fish. I'm not saying that the fishing itself was a waste of time. I'm saying that to truly pre-fish for a tournament, which is what a lot of folks did, and we did ourselves, kind of, we more or less just went fishing. Because if it were up to me to go pre-fish for something like this, I would have definitely went on the outside. You know, be honest with you, I definitely would have went to the outside. We would have fished in up towards Snake Bite, Florida Bay, because that is where our stronghold is. As a group of anglers from the Space Coast, the cleaner water where we can see fish, that's where we do much better. That's because that's what we're used to. I love fishing. I don't give a shit where I'm fishing. I don't care if I'm fishing in a creek. I don't care if I'm fishing out in the middle of the ocean. I just enjoy fishing. So I like to fish. I don't mind going fishing before the actual event. But what me and Alex did on Friday was retarded. I mean, we shouldn't have put ourselves through that. That just didn't make any sense. But, you know, I don't know. I just, like I said before, at the top of the show, I have mad respect for anybody that took on the challenge. I have mad respect for anybody that made it to three checkpoints just because of the fact you covered so much ground in one day. And regardless of what anybody says or did or whatever, or however the chips may have fallen, I had a great time with great people hanging around campfires, and the camaraderie is always great, man. So, well, that's it. I mean, it's tough, man. When I look at it like this too, and I think a lot of folks need to, you gotta kind of feel for them as the tournament directors, depending upon how the original situation kind of took a crap, because they had a sweet setup over there in Everglades City, and for whatever reason they had to change locations. So whoever dropped the ball on that end, whether it be our tournament directors or the park, you know, whichever way that fell, you know, they really kind of put a dampen on it for a lot of folks, I think, was just the fact that it seemed like it was thrown together, and I don't know. But I will tell you, I'm game for next year if it's in Florida. I know they were talking at one point about maybe taking this thing to Louisiana or something like that, and I don't know. We'll see. But that's the thing, man. It's just, God.
I think they have it's certainly a solid format, and it was solid enough of a format and fun enough of a tournament to have, you know, everybody, you know, certainly in our group, you know, the four of us that did the original one, and then, you know, it had us jacked up and ready to go. You know, and the tournament is, it's a fun format. It definitely does make you push yourself. You typically wouldn't do to yourself in one day of fishing, but you know, it's an investment. You know, it's an investment for you to pick up and go down there for several days, and also to enter the tournament alone is an investment. And it was disheartening to see it, because, you know, that was kind of my feelings, you know, that, you know, even though they had the tournament last year, this was the year that there was several more, I mean, there was a whole lot more, you know, of the guys that would be considered, I guess, for lack of a better term, the legitimate kayak angling community. You know, the guys that fish every tournament that comes up. There was a lot more of those out there this year, and you just didn't have that. You didn't have that last year, and that's where I hope they didn't sour it enough, because it was nice to have that level of competition in the tournament, because that means you want to push even harder and go even stronger. So, I mean, for me, I would definitely love to do another one, and you know, But like I said, it would have to have – there definitely have to be some retooling of the situation. Personally, for me, I don't mind the distance. I think the distance we did was decent, you know, in that 20-mile range, somewhere in there. You know, that's a good amount of – I mean, that weeds – honestly, it's you know, if it was just a kayak fishing tournament, then it would – be a kayak fishing tournament. You go fish an area and see how big of a fish you can catch. You know, this is an endurance, you know, teamwork. It's got so many different factors to it. You know, that amount of distance with, you know, if we had that same amount of distance that we covered but had twice as many checkpoints, you know, there it's a whole different ball game. You actually have people being able to spend an hour or more fishing an area, you know. There's things that need that certainly could be looked at, and I know several people have talked about writing letters and talking to them, and for what it's worth, I'm definitely going to let them know what I thought of it compared to last year, and hope that, you know, that they can take any criticism or advice in stride and not take it as a knock against them, but, you know, people only wanting to make the situation better. That being said, I had a great time. You know, it was fun. It was a pain in the rear. You know, immediately when I got done doing it, I said there was no way I was going to do another one. And that's the same thing I said immediately when I got done doing the last one. You know, it makes you not want to do it again. But then in the same breath, it makes you want to do it again because of the challenge and because of the camaraderie and everything else, you know.
Yeah.
So it's certainly a good tournament. I definitely don't knock it, and I would seriously look at doing it, you know, every time it comes up. But they definitely need to look at a few things and tighten a few things up. And I'm with you 100%. I mean, they had plenty of time to you know, make Ziploc bags with everybody's name on it. We saw them packaging up the shirts earlier in the day in those Ziploc bags. And we, in turn, saw later in the evening, got that Ziploc bag with our shirt in it. No reason that thing shouldn't have been taped to the measuring board. You know, things like that they did, they messed up pretty bad, you know. I mean, it was hard to have 100 guys standing on a shoreline for an hour and a half waiting to go fishing, you know, so.
Yeah, you know, and you know, we've got 15 people here in the chat room. I'm sure this is going to be a very highly listened to podcast. I'm sure a lot of folks will take from it what you want, and please understand what I'm telling you is that I'm not knocking the event because I love the style of the event. I'm just voicing my opinion on how things kind of unfolded. So, you know, it is what it is. I did have an opportunity to get my first peacock bass, which I was pumped about that. So that was cool. And just see some really cool crap, man. I mean, it's not very often when you're sitting on a flat and a 6-foot tarpon swims by you, like you're not even there. Or you look over and there's, you know, a 6 or 7 foot bull shark chilling on the flat that's in 2 foot of water. It was definitely a lot of fun. I think that there's a lot of areas, both on the West Coast and on the East Coast where they can do a tournament like this, of Florida itself. I mean, I even after last year, I actually pushed to see if they do one down here or here by us in the lagoon, because Lord knows there's plenty of islands out there. There's plenty of places you can make checkpoints, and you know, nothing would be right on the water unless you went to somewhere else. But you know, The opportunity for the checkpoints and the whole thing would be a possibility. I don't know. But I don't know. We'll see.
You know, that's where I fall. The format was great. I mean, the format is perfect for what it's billed as and what it actually is, you know, which is an endurance and thing like that. I think they may have taken it a little too far with the endurance challenge this year. You know, and lost sight of the fact that those people, you know, they had 100 people coming down there to fish, not just paddle. I don't think we spent more than last year when we did it. I don't think we spent more than an hour on any of the sections of water that we had to cover to get to another checkpoint. The farthest, you know, the farthest stretch we had was that 3 mile stretch to get to the very outside checkpoint from our other outside. I think it was a little over 3 miles, and we covered that in about an hour. And it was, you know, you felt like you had time to fish someone, you know, and that just wasn't the case this year. You just didn't feel like you had any time to fish. I mean, we were in great we caught fish early and quick at that first checkpoint. We were in great shape going into the second one, or on our way to the second one. By the time we got there, 10 miles later, you know, at that point we only had 45 minutes, an hour at the most, and we stayed there for an hour and 15 minutes. And that extra 30 minutes that we stayed there, we only had 10 minutes at the last checkpoint. And it wasn't like we spent all day at that first checkpoint trying to get a fish. I mean, I think we were there for a total of 45 minutes and had a fish and were gone, you know. And you know, we played it as almost as well as you could play it and still couldn't, you know, feasibly have the time to do it. You know, there were people that did it, you know, but you're talking about, you know, 6 people out of 100 were able to accomplish the mission, which that was not the case with the last tournament. I think over half of the field was able to get to the checkpoint and get a fish and get back, you know. And this year that wasn't the case, you know. I mean, your rate of return on those people coming back and actually completing the course, even though it was a challenging and they felt like they had accomplished amazing things in that day, you know, they still were able to complete and finish the tournament. Whereas it almost felt like, you know, I heard Drew say it, that it felt like they set you up for failure. You know, it was almost like there was no way to do it. And by all means, you know, Steve and his partner, the effing crazy guys, you know, two of their teams put in top place. One of those teams was a guy that had been up all night long, you know, you know, they did amazing work. All three of those teams all showed up within the last 10 minutes of closing of the tournament. You know, so that just goes to show you that even those guys that did well were virtually on the edge of complete failure, you know. Yeah. And for you have people that were not just fishing well, but fishing extremely well and getting through and getting it done, and they caught quality fish and they did a great job. You know, but for those guys to come in, you know, just before the close of business with the thing is just kind of, you know, that just went to show you that maybe they stretched it a little too far. And hopefully they understand that and they can look at those numbers and see that pretty quickly. Because if you think about it, I think the only three other teams that got two fish at two checkpoints. And then it rolled right into the teams that only got one fish. And you know, that's, you know, to only have 6 teams out of 50 even just get two fish, I mean, that's, you know, showing you where it went. And there was a lot of teams that DQ'd on time, a lot of teams. So, you know, or just frankly just gave up because they didn't get their first fish within 20 minutes. And basically if you didn't, you were done.
Yeah, we talked to a couple of those guys on the way out of Snake Bite. There was a team that we come across and they're like, look, we're done for the day. We're just going to pre-fish. And I'm thinking to myself, dude, you still got some time. Like, you might want to, and then I start doing the math in my head and I'm like, wait a minute, they really don't have any time.
No, and realistically we had done great at that checkpoint and where we were at, we're already a third of the way to the next one, but realistically, we didn't even have time, and we did wonderful, you know. So it's just hopefully they take a look at that, and it's a great format. I haven't done a whole lot of kayak competitions. I've fished, you know, inshore a few tournaments, and I've done several offshore tournaments, and you don't get the camaraderie out of a boat tournament as you do out of the kayak stuff. And you know, it has the potential to become something that's not just a tournament, but people coming to gather for the year and stuff
right,
like
more
that.
More like a boondoggle.
Exactly, boondoggle with a tournament aspect to it. And I just hope that you know, and it was, and like I said, I mean, it was cool with only, you know, the 30 teams the first time, but it seemed a little more cool to it this year with that those extra teams and the guys that were a little bit more, you know, some of those guys that fish all the kayak fishing tournaments and stuff like that, and that draw was even that much more of a little, you know, a little tantalizing thing. And, you know, just hate to have them continue to slide down because it won't last long as a tournament, you know. And it was fun. It was fun the first year, and it was fun this year, you know. I mean, of course, we always have fun. I don't think you can get the Space Coast kayak guys, at least us, you know, this little core group, together and not have a really good freaking time. Basically, you'd have to not have a pulse if you can't have a good time with us. That's pretty much where that stands. So,
yeah.
I mean, well, the good time's there, and you hate for the good time to go because the other stuff can't follow along and produce with it. So
I'll tell you what, I was talking to somebody, I can't remember who it was because I wasn't in the right frame of mind to remember, but I was talking to somebody one night while we were there, and I was telling them, how cool would it be just to do like a weekend long tournament, a Friday, Saturday, Sunday type event, or even longer, with just a crazy endurance kind of a thing, but giving you plenty of time to fish areas. And say like you started in Key Largo and you had to go from Key Largo to Flamingo, or you had to go from Key Largo to Chokoleski or something crazy like that. You know, like it could
right.
be like a straight up like a week long challenge or whatever, and make it a huge money deal. Get corporate sponsors kicking some money so that you're actually walking out of there with a pretty legitimate check. I think that would be awesome because it's going to also add, it would also have to add a camping element to it. Then again, time management would be a thing. But now you're pretty much on your own to go and fish. And nothing says you have to fish a specific area. You would just have to complete the task in the allotted time. And it could be something as simple as a total inches for all of the fish that you caught during your trip. So, pick your whatever three species of fish or whatever, and – say you guys go out and say one team catches 30 fish for an average of, I don't know, 25 inches per fish or whatever. And then another team goes out and only catches 10 fish, and they've got an average of 15 inches, whatever. The team with the most inches at the end of the deal, I think that would be pretty sweet to win that way. Something crazy like that. I mean, I don't know. You never know. That's the thing I think that's interesting is you have with the kayak industry is we have the ability to be able to do really, really cool tournaments and really fun kind of ways of doing them. And it still doesn't have the pressure of a big dollar tournament, you know? Yeah, we did 24 hours. Jean and I did 24 hours for a fishathon one time, and she almost fell asleep and rolled off the dock when she was fishing with a rod in her hand. But, you know, I'm just saying, like, a good example of what I think guys should do, and I agree with you, Murdoch, inshore, offshore, freshwater. I mean, if you want to get down to it in competition, all right, and let's just be frank, okay, there's a lot of people in the fishing world that feel like they should dominate over everybody else all the time for whatever reason, all right? And there's times where if you guys were here on the Space Coast and you're like, hey, let's all go fishing and stuff, don't think that when I fish with my boys like Alex or Randy or Wade or Peppy or Alan that I don't want to whoop their asses every time we fish because we do want to beat each other every time we fish. That's just the way it is, you know? But I think that there's a lot there would be a lot of interest in trying to crown somebody as like the for the year, like the kayak angler for the year for, let's just say, the state of Florida. So what if there was an inshore, offshore, and freshwater tournament series, quote unquote, that did all of that? Because in my opinion, if you want to call yourself the best of the best, if you want to say you're one of the best of the best, you have to be disciplined in all phases of fishing. You know, anybody can go out and catch a spot-tail catfish. There's no big deal with that. I mean, it's literally a spot-tail catfish, redfish, right? Like, let's be real about it. If you want to go out and you want to say that you're the jam or whatever, if you can't go inshore and catch a fish, go offshore, catch a fish, and then find a bass somewhere, you know, you're not that well-rounded. But I think if you were to say we're looking to crown the state's champion or whatever, like, you know, they call this the world championship. Hobie has the world championship. Everyone has the, you know what I'm saying, Drew. Don't complicate things. Everybody has like a different world championship or a championship or whatever. Why not do like a state of Florida, a straight up state of Florida fishing tournament? You call it a series if you want, whatever, and maybe do three events, and or maybe do, actually what would be cool would make it long throughout the year, like they used to do the hot circuit up here by us for offshore only. But if you did like three inshore tournaments, three offshore tournaments, and three freshwater tournaments, and spread them out around the state so nobody had an advantage, right? And then you make those tournaments one of those deals where when you show up to check in for captain's meeting, you're fishing where the tournament's being held. None of this driving across the world or going home to your home waters or any of this kind of shit. You have to be good enough to find fish wherever they make you fish. You know, I think that would be a really cool tournament. I mean, I would be down for it. You know, I think that would also draw a pretty hefty crowd of people, making the entry fee somewhat of a reasonable amount of money, but do 100% payback, you know, or at least a 90% payback, or even if you did a 75% payback and 25% to charity or whatever, if you get cash involved, then you'll see numbers of people who want to enter these tournaments start to kind of improve. And, you know, you'd have guys who would show up who would be as legit guys and girls, sorry, you'd have guys and girls show up who are just about as legit as they can get, because that's not something that everybody would feel comfortable in doing. And I think that that's kind of what this tournament, the Adventure Fishing World Championship, does. It allows people to kind of step outside their comfort zone and say, you know what, let's do it, you know? Drew's mad at me because he's already doing 27 tournaments this year, which is crazy. But, you know, I think if you added something like that, I think that it would be interesting. And, you know, I think you get a lot of people to come out to it. You know, another thing that, while we're on the topic of tournament fishing, that I know we've all talked about a lot of times is there's a lot of folks that feel like tournament fishing isn't for them because they feel that a lot of times tournaments are rigged. And if you don't hear that scutter butt wherever you live, you're not in the inner circle of the kayak fishing industry, apparently, because there's a lot of, and I'm not, trust me when I tell you, I'm not piggybacking this on any comments going on in the chat room or onto any current events. It's just a fact, and everybody knows it, that there's an underlined uncertainty of a lot of shenanigans that have taken place over the course of the short life of the kayak fishing industry. And I think if you did a tournament series where not only when you check in do you have to show, you know, all of your gear, whatever, but also the morning of you getting ready to leave, you have to show up, let's say, an hour before launch and everyone's boat has to be gone through with a fine-tooth comb. And if you've got something in your boat that you shouldn't have in your boat, you know, i.e. a chunk of mullet, a ladyfish, some shrimp in a bag, any kind of thing like that, Randy volunteers to do cavity searches since he's a prison guard. He's already used to doing that. You know, I'm just saying, because if you did that, I think that there's guys that would show up and actually fish, thinking that there's a very good possibility that it's going to be the most straight run tournament that you can find. I mean, there's always going to be cheaters. There's no way you can stop them completely. But at least if you make it as hard for them as possible, then, you know, because, I mean, just look at the redfish boat circuit. I mean, how many captains and well-known anglers do you know that have been kicked out of the redfish circuit or even bass fishing? I mean, up until like 3 years ago, it seemed like one or two guys a week were getting thrown out of a freaking tournament for cheating, you know? And it that's what puts a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths. You know, if you just set up a tournament and have it set up similar in fashion to the camping, the camaraderie, the hanging out, the whatever, I think that just kind of changes it, man. You know what I'm saying? It kind of makes people feel like you're a part of something, as opposed to, here's my check to get into this thing. Oh, cool, I fished it and I sucked, so I didn't win anything. Damn, I'm out like this much money because I drove all the way up here and the weather sucked and this sucked and that sucked. You know, like Jacksonville is a great example of a tournament that, you know, we went and we fished. We had a damn good time, even though it sucked for us. We had a damn good time. We got to crash at a good friend's house and hang out and have a good time talking to local guys and stuff like that and meeting new people. But it didn't matter to us if we won, placed, or didn't, or otherwise, because we were there to have a good time. And I think if we can show some of the new guys who are getting into the sport that, look, man, these events are much more than just give me your entry fee and go out and good luck kind of an event, you might get more people to think about getting involved in it. I mean, look at the Boondoggle, for God's sakes. It's not even a tournament. You know, the first one, there was like 14 people there. The second one, there was like 30-something people there. And then we had 60 or 70 people or 70 or 80 people at Virginia Beach or whatever it was. And then we had God only knows how many people at Cars Park. And then we had a bunch of people up at the Panhandle. So it's grown. It's gotten bigger and bigger. And more people want to come to it. You know, more. It's just, and it's because the word has gotten out. It's a great time. So, there's a big tournament in Pensacola the same weekend as the Jacksonville deal, isn't it? Inshore and offshore is the same weekend. But Drew just posted something up there. But I don't know. You know, this is one of those conversations that can go on forever and ever and ever. You know, I think next week, we're going to the topic I'd like to talk about, which is one that's like really getting on my nerves, is and this is going to make a lot of people laugh, is the buffoonery that's going on in this industry with pro staffery. It's gotten completely out of control. And I'd really, really like to kind of tackle that topic next week, if anybody dares to get involved in it. It's one of those, it's, you know, most of us that fish, we've got companies that support us and stuff. And I know by looking at the people in the chat room, there's a lot of guys in there that have earned their way and have paid their dues and such. And I'm pretty sure that you probably know what I'm talking about when I say that. You know, I know for a fact that Drew Mixon's, yeah, I'm down, Chucky says. Cool. Because, I mean, it's just one of those things, you know. Social media has kind of drowned out, you know, what used to take folks like myself, you know, years and years and years to accomplish. Now a guy can go catch a bass in a pond, or go catch a redfish on a piece of mullet, and next thing you know, he's the greatest fisherman on the planet, and he's trying to promote everybody's stuff. So I don't know. We're gonna be receiving free toilet paper. Non-pro staff Murdoch is pro staffery for Haynes, or no, with Charmin extra saw. I don't know. But no, I definitely want to talk about that. I mean, it's just, maybe we'll give some tips. That's what we should do. We should give some tips on what you can do to go about doing it the legit way, you know? Because, I mean, I don't know. Do you know what I'm saying, Alex, when I say that?
Yeah, I feel you on that one. You know, I don't really walk much of a line with all that stuff. I'm not too into it, you know? If I like something and those people that choose to associate themselves with me, if I like something, I'm going to tell people about it. I'm pretty much an open book when it comes to what I do and the fishing I do around here. And I actually catch a lot of heat from that, from a lot of people. But I'll tell you what, when I receive phone calls and those people book trips with me, they're awfully happy that I'm over with them and I tell them what's going on. And I'm only going to use a product that works for me. You know, I spend enough time on the water. I don't have time for crap that doesn't work, basically. So, you know, I mean, it's you know, there's very few companies that I will actually say that I truly believe they're, you know, great product and they're a good company. And that just doesn't come from, you know, just their product doing good and working well. It comes from the people that are behind the company. You know, I paddled Malibu kayaks for many years, and I wasn't, you know, the product was great. The company, not so wonderful. You know, they had their issues at the time, and I hope they're doing better now. But you know, it was hard for me to stand behind that product. Granted, the product was good, but to recommend somebody something there's a right way and a wrong way to do things, and you know, it's something that. You know, I know there's one guy that has – there's a few guys that have it down, and they know what it takes, but it's not just that. You have to be able to produce. It's a marketing scheme. It's a mutually beneficial relationship. And if it's not mutually beneficial, then it's not right. You know, if you're not doing something for them that they can actually legitimately say – this product is selling more because you are, then realistically, it's all kind of a joke. It's marketing. And in the long run, it is all marketing, you know, but I equate it, and I know I've talked to you about it, and I equate it to kind of what the surfing industry went through 20 years ago, you know, when Volcom just started and lost, and, you know, Quicksilver was already there, but just started really taking off. And, you know, 20 years ago, you could surf in a couple tournaments or a contest and you know, send a resume to any company and they'd send you a box full of shit. And, you know, and you'd stick stickers all over your boards, and it awfully reminiscent of what's going on right now. You do that right now to the surfing industry. You send a letter with two contest entries in it that you didn't do so well in, and a couple of pictures or a thrown together reel on YouTube or something like that, and you'll be even lucky to get a rejection reply. You know, I mean, it's the new industry. Granted, some people have been using kayaks to fish for thousands of years. The industry as we see it and as we know it today is a brand new industry. I mean, there's a lot of great companies out there making kayak products. When were their inception dates? Granted, you know, some of them are a little bit older. Most of them, less than 10 years, I'd have to say, you know, and the majority of them probably less than 5. It's just kind of the way it goes. I got into kayak fishing because I grew up waiting. I grew up here on the lagoons. I walk down, I ride my bike down the street at Pine Island, and I jump in the Indian River every single day after school. When I got in a kayak, I was like, this is like waiting with a whole bunch of shit with me. You know, I get all these lures and I get all this stuff, and I don't have to carry a backpack. This is awesome, you know, and I fell in love with it right away. And I had a crappy little piece of crap kayak. And when I started guiding, it was one of the first things I wanted to put out there because I enjoyed it so much. you know, and unless you can, you know, feel a little bit of love for it and really put yourself out there as a person that enjoys it, you know, just getting a box of stuff doesn't really, you know, doesn't really complete any kind of circle for you, you know?
Yeah.
You know, a lot
yeah.
of people like to promote themselves, and there's nothing wrong with self-promotion. I mean, I catch flack all day from people, you know, I've lost, you know, friends that I've had for years on Facebook that are, you know, they don't want to hear any more about my business. Well, my business is me. I'm a fishing guy. That's what I am. That's what I do. That's how I feed my kids. So if I'm talking to you and we're talking about fishing, then I'm going to tell you I'm a fishing guy, you know. However, you know, self-promotion for the sake of just getting one box of stuff, you know, just long enough to get a box of stuff is, you know, there's a whole different aspect to it. And eventually, I personally feel just like the surfing industry, as it grew and is now a multi-billion dollar industry where you can feasibly have a solid career, even if you're not surfing, even if you're not riding a surfboard. But in the, you know, the entire, you know, ball of wax, so to speak, that has become surfing, the industry itself, you know, there's viable job options. There's stuff like that. This industry, kayak fishing, isn't going anywhere. You know, it's only getting bigger. And as that creates more opportunities, and you know, it's going to also close some of those doors, though, I think. A lot of these companies are going to get to a point sending 1,000 people by shit isn't the best way to get their advertising. You know, it is hard to with social media, though. Like you said, social media has thrown a whole big loop into everything. I mean, there was no Facebook 5 years ago, you know. There was MySpace, but nobody used it unless you were 14. you know, it's a whole different ballgame now. So, you know, we'll see.
Yep.
But,
down to 2 minutes left, man. If anybody wants to, real quick, well, let me just say this real fast. The reason why I bring this up is because I was recently asked at the shop if I would be willing to put somebody on my pro staff. And I'm like, my pro staff, like KBB Outfitters pro staff. I don't have a pro staff, really. I mean, who are you? was what I asked. I mean, I don't even know your name. Tell me your name. Tell me something about you. Whatever the case may be. But so it just kind of threw me for a loop, man. And we'll get more into it. I just got told in my ear. I got 90 seconds. So Alex, real quick, contact information.
www.localalliancecharters.com on the interweb, 321-480-3255 if you want to give me a call. Kayak fishing, skiff fishing, inshore near Port Canaveral, lagoons, Mosquito, Banana River, and Indian River Lagoon. Give me a ring if you just want to talk fishing. All right.
Cool. Excellent. And then, of course, thank you everybody who showed up down there. It was a great time. We had an awesome time as always. I want to thank my sponsors, Hobie, Orca Coolers, Tackle Webs, Railblazer, Yak Gear, Ego Nets, E&O, Bending Branches, Slayer Inc. Lures, KBB, KBB Outfitters, Real Adrenaline Energy Drinks, and, of course, Adventurous Custom Rods. Appreciate you guys joining us tonight. Feel free to tune in next week, as I'm sure that will rattle some cages. The topic will be pro staffery at its finest. So feel free to check that out. To everybody who's listening tonight to the podcast or listening live, take a kid fishing in the future of our sport. God bless. Be safe out there. We'll talk to you again next week. And with that, we are out. See ya.